So I wanted to start with thanking the organizers, Nina, Masha, Robert, and William for organizing this wonderful conference. And the wisdom of the organizers also proved by the fact that they let people who do actual stuff to talk in the middle and schedule Savas and me to talk at the very beginning and the very end. I slightly changed the title of my talk, but I think it's not very much because that's what our workshop was really about. And of course, there is a good reason to do it now because, well, we're all excited to see these kind of pictures of gravitational wave signals from LIGO. But also, very importantly, there will be new stuff coming out soon. So this is a map of millisecond pulsars. And this is their sensitivity curve. They don't have suspension, but they have this line here, which matches the orbital period of the Earth. So there is kind of suspension for them as well. But the bottom line here that they're in the regime now, they also will be seen expecting to see signals. And that's completely a different range of frequencies, like from 10 to minus 9 to 10 to minus 7 hertz. And we already discussed that LISA will be launched, well, hopefully in early 2030s, which is some time to wait, but I'm particle theorist, so I'm used to wait. And actually, these are not insanely long time scales. Is it clear from what was being discussed at this workshop, we are witnessing the dawn of precision black hole physics. And there is already sort of exciting astronomy and astrophysics happening, and will continue to happen. And well, as particle theorist, I'm a bit jealous. So it's natural to ask question, well, can we also do new fundamental physics with this data? Let me be a bit more specific what I mean by that. Savas also, in his talk, actually, my talk will be probably more or less along the talk Savas gave in the beginning, but maybe because now we're used to axions, I will just discuss some more details. So in particular, Savas gave a proxy for what we mean by new fundamental physics. So this is my version of that. So basically, it's something which is impossible to decide true or false for an infinitely smart theorist equipped with an infinitely powerful computer. So we really need nature to tell us what's going on. And well, to qualify to be new fundamental physics, I think there are several filters to pass. It should be possible to derive from known physics. That's kind of what I said before. But also, it should be consistent with known physics. It should be consistent with known mass. And also, it should be consistent with known common sense. And of course, that's the hardest one. And also, that's the most subjective one, because different people have different common sense. So what I will be talking about will be highly subjective. But I think it's a part of the job description for a theorist to be subjective and to have tastes. So what is passes common sense, depends on your tastes. Tastes shouldn't be necessarily good, but you should have some taste. it will be highly subjective. Well, and it turns out that actually it's extremely challenging to pass all these criteria in this area. So we often hear, we're probing gravity in nonlinear regime. That's very exciting. But if you start thinking seriously, what kind of new physics can be probed with black hole measurements? It's really, really challenging. Borrowing the bad lingua, bad bureaucratic lingua from particle theorists, there are kind of several frontiers which one can see here. And there are kind of two high precision frontiers, high energy and low energy. And say a few words about that. It's looking for high energy modifications of gravity, looking for some long distance modifications of gravity. And then what we, in particle theory, people often talk collider frontier, or energy frontier, and that's actually, well, in particle physics, we kind of often do precision measurements, but like, to be honest, we usually do it when life is not too good. So what we really like to do, we like to smash things and produce new particles and observe them. So that's the natural regime to work on. And that's what exactly we were discussing on the workshop. So what black holes, are physical black holes doing for us? Well, they're potentially producing new particles. And it's, again, for particle physicists, it's very unusual that there is a collider, well, typical collider probes like one decade in energies, one decade in particle masses at best. So here, and with all these experiments which I mentioned, we will probe 10 orders of magnitude in energy. So it's mostly, well, unfortunately, there is a restriction coming from nature by using black holes as our detectors. So there's not much we can do about that. But so there is 10 orders of magnitude, and it's very exciting. So we should really make sure that we probe all of them. So let me, before coming to this point, which is will be the main focus of this workshop and of this conference, let me kind of comment and illustrate why it's hard to do these things. And I apologize, it's not for the lack of time, but also, well, it's not meant to be a review of everything what people thought about that. And basically, I choose, well, a couple of examples. It will be, I chose either my own work or work on my good friends, because I don't want to insult people whom I don't know. So.
You only insult your friends.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So yeah, let me start with my friends.
So if you are successful and insulting the people you don't know, you do know, you cannot give this talk again.
Okay. What can I do? So let me start with my friends. So high energy modifications of gravity. Well, some of my friends sitting here. what we do, well, what is not being done here, that's what we used to do in particle physics when we're like looking at high energy things. So here it's probably better to say not high energy, but high curvature. So one adds high derivative operators to the action and probes them. It modifies Einstein action in this form. And it's, well, it's nice, at least it's consistent and familiar framework. It passes like most of the consistency criteria, which I listed above. The problem was that, well, it's only kind of by definition, it's only high frequency detectors have a shot here because, well, we're kind of looking at highest possible energies. And one needs to be really lucky for this new physics to be suppressed by sufficiently low scale to show up at LIGO. Well, and I would say it's an interesting theoretical challenge to construct a UV model which would lead to effective field theory like that, where this scale is something like 10 kilometers. So basically, so what you need roughly, you need kind of something like a string theory with that scale, which is that string length, and you need to couple that string theory to standard model, which has much, much higher energy scales in it. Well, it's definitely something to think about. So that's for high energy precision frontier. A low energy precision frontier, here I will be insulting myself. So I use some time thinking about that. Well, here, IR modification of gravity, first thing which comes to mind is, let's do graviton mass. And back, like around 2004, 2007, actually we came up with models which are, again, they're consistent effective field theory models. What's interesting for the purpose of gravitational wave measurements there was that gravitational waves are massive, but these models, they're Lorentz violating models. So introduce some kind of fluid which introduces mass for a graviton. As a result, scalar and vector perturbations are the same in JR, and even flat cosmological solutions are the same in JR in these models. So in particular, that framework gives you a setup where LIGO bound on the graviton mass, which often used to be said, okay, let's do it for fun, because we know it's much lower than that. Actually, there it's meaningful. It's the strongest constraint on these models, because you really need to probe tensor gravitational waves to see that. Because again, you need to be lucky. So for the mass should be large enough such that it affects measurements of black holes. Although Well, we, here there are more orders of magnitude because LIGO puts the bound, the graviton mass, way well below the energy scale, which is the frequency of where it's measured, because, well, there is long propagation distance from the sources to us. That helps. But then again, I would say there is interesting theoretical challenge to find UV complete models, which kind of which macroscopic theories which lead to these models. And I should say, well, these models, they kind of push the last bullet point in my requirement list about common sense, because there is additional bonus here. So these models allow you to send signals instantaneously. There is no mathematical inconsistency here, because I said these are non-relativistic theory of gravity. So in some sense, they're similar to Newtonian gravity. You have instantaneous interactions. But it definitely pushes a known common sense for many people, including myself. These two slides were kind of illustration that it's possible to think about this precision part, but definitely it is challenging. Again, why go there if we have kind of collider which started working and which produces particles potentially? So that will be the focus of the rest of the talk. So that leads us, well, to these slides which we already saw. I'm just proud of our ability with Nina Savas to produce movies. Actually, I saw Savas had much more elaborated version of that with Mirror Exploding. This is outdated version from 2009.
Made the same.
Yeah, but you added Mirror right exploding. I was very impressed. Yeah.
New feature of Keynote update.
So the key is there. You should teach me how to do that. So the key point is Penrose processes, which allows extract energy from rotating black holes. And then if you have a massive boson, then black hole, and this is a great movie, my black hole may spin down and produce this particle.
It's okay.
The cloud appeared instantaneously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Krypton's an astronomical timescale.
Yes. Well, and that leads to this object which we're discussing here, which may be called as a gravitational atom in the sky. And the crucial difference, of course, of this atom, apart from this scale and apart from the fact that there is a black hole in the center, which actually sources particles, that we have bosons rather than fermions, so there are huge occupation number. So really, it's a classical system, similar to a laser. And well, then leads to this kind of plots. So when this again, these are X-ray binaries, and so for one effect which was discussed a lot is there, spin down. Now, what I want to do now, I want to discuss a little bit this. We talked a lot about like putting bound constraints on different parameters, and I said in general there are 10 orders of magnitude, but it's natural to focus now at this highest energy range, simply because, well, we have LIGO operating there. But also there is a theoretical reason to focus on that mass range, because that happens to be the mass range of the QCD axion with this parameter FA. I remind you, it's essentially coupling constant of QCD axion. And when it's for the Planck scale, that means that it couples to everything with gravitational strength. If it's somewhat below that, it means it couples stronger than that. Stellar mass black holes, they probe a very interesting mass range, coupling scale range for the QCD axion, which is roughly between gut unification scale and Planck scale. So I want to spend some time discussing, come back to some theoretical motivations for these axions and what we may expect from them, which will give us some guidance, what parameters to look for here. This plot can be also rephrased very nicely in this way, as Mina done with her friends. So this is exclusion plots coming from the different black holes. So there is, this region, I think one should say it's disfavored, but basically, probably large part of it is really excluded, unless like all X-ray spin determinations are completely wrong, which I'm not sure I became a good enough friend with Jack to. So on the axis here, there are these two parameters, mass and FA. So let me talk a little bit kind of where axions coming from and how to think about them. And the way I will try to convince you, well, you probably don't need to be convinced, but I will try to convince you again they're not crazy. Savas already was doing it in their very first talk, and he talked about string theory landscape a little bit. So let me start not with string theory landscape, but the easiest way to convince somebody that they are not crazy is to show that they're already there. So they're around. So before starting talking about string theory landscape, I will do exactly that, and I will walk you through the exercise which we did with Nima and Italian friends back 2007. Namely, let's think about standard model. Let's not think about string theory, it's just standard model. It's a theory, it's a field theory coupled to gravity. So it's natural to ask that's the theory which to large approximation, good approximation, describe our real world. It's natural to ask, okay, what are the vacuum in the standard model? Well, there is a vacuum which we know and love, where we live in. But just like in string theory, one may now look, because it's a gravitational theory, one may ask, okay, are there vacua with some of the dimensions being compactified? And the simplest case would be to take one of our dimensions and compactify it on a circle. That's exactly what we do in string theory. And then the size of this dimension becomes a dynamical field called radion. And you get the potential for this radion, which can be easily understood. So this kind of a large radius, that's when this dimension is large, is dominated by a cosmological constant. So it's just cosmological expansion. Universe wants to expand. But if you go at smaller scales, then quantum effects become important. And the quantum effects are Casimir forces coming from known light particles. So it's completely, what I'm doing here is completely, it's known physics. I'm using standard model physics, which is out there. And we find, well, there is a, from bosons, from graviton and from photon, there will be a negative contribution to its potential, which goes down. But then very soon, and there is a interesting coincidence here, we know that neutrino mass scale is of order the vacuum energy scale. So the potential flips up because neutrinos are fermions, and there are more neutrino degree of freedom than massless bosons. So they flip the potential up. They go in the opposite direction. And you get this minimum, which corresponds to what string theory is called ADS3 crosses one vacuum of the standard model. And well, it's actually, it's not such a bad vacuum. So it's the size of this extra circle here, it's something like 20 microns. So you can imagine actually that there are regions out there in the universe where usually when we talk about compactifications, we think about like the three-dimensional creatures would be living in this vacuum. But living in three dimensions is a bit uncomfortable because basically you have only one place where you can put food and can get rid of digested food. So, but these vacuums are better than that because this 20 microns size is actually, well, it's sufficiently large that you know, like some inhabitant of our own landscape can fit in there. So this would be typical creature living there. Let's ask ourselves, what is the physics they see? These guys are advanced enough that they do particle physics. What kind of particles they see? Well, they see, before doing that, I should say, well, that was one vacuum, but actually there are many more vacua in standard model. Essentially, every Reissner, if you have charged black hole, unfortunately, astrophysical black holes are not charged, but if you have a charged black hole, and if it's close to extremal, then it roughly has this geometry. So here it's far away, it's asymptotically flat, and you approach the horizon, you approach this ADS2 crosses 2 horizon, and that's typical string compactification, and this sphere is supported by the flux of electric field, which due to the black hole charge. So charged black holes can be thought of as kind of extremal charged black holes, they are the main walls between vacua of different dimensionality. And that's exactly how kind of landscape of vacua arises in string theory. So there is really a landscape of vacua in standard model, but let's focus on that one with a circle. So let's look, what are the particles there? Well, there is always a standard model because it's a micron size compactification, so there are, it doesn't affect all any of microphysics. Well, there is additional particle radion, which is kind of a cousin of a graviton that's just excitation of the shape of this extra dimension. Well, in its mass, it's very light because this extra dimension is very heavy and it's kind of power suppressed. But also this vacuum has an axion. And this axion, well, that's, Savas already talked about that, because you have a circle here and you have a photon. So there is a, if there is a component of the photon which goes, kind of, now you have a literal cylinder, there is a component of the photon which, if it's constant in that direction, that's like acts as a Haronov-Bohm flux. So classically, it doesn't carry any energy, but it's a non-trivial gauge configuration. And quantum mechanically, and here quantum mechanics is very simple. It's just the fact that there are electron loops. So you have corrections to the energy of this configuration. That's a Haronov-Bohm effect. There are virtual electron loops going around the circle. And because it's a virtual electron, it costs, there is exponential cost here. Electron is very heavy compared to the size of the circle. So you get, well, this axion, which is really kind of cousin of photon, it has a mass e to minus 10 to the 8. So that's, well, in any units. I didn't put units here because they don't matter. It's a really, really tiny number. And we see where this number is coming from. So it's coming from the fact that the size of this extra dimension, or in this case, it's like one of our dimensions, being considered as extra. It's much larger than the Compton wavelength of the charged particles, particle charged under the corresponding gauge field. And also you find, well, the analog of what we call in FA, the strength, how this inverse strength of how strongly this axion is coupled to the rest of the standard model in this vacuum. Well, it's related to electron charge because it came from gauge field. But also there is a factor, it depends exactly on the same geometric factor on the length of extra dimension, which appears in the exponential suppression here. So kind of the strength of the coupling, we see from this example, and that turns out to be generic, the strength of the coupling of axions appears in the exponent for the mass suppression of this coupling. Well, and the reason for that, it's a bit weird when we talk about QCD axion, we say, oh, this is an absolutely massless particle which coupled to QCD, and that breaks its shift symmetry, and that's how it solves a strong CP problem. So it's a bit weird. You want to impose the symmetry for particle to be massless, but then you want it to be broken, and then the way how it comes out in string theory in this construction, standard model, because this particle is really coming from gauge field. So, and it's shift symmetry only broken by this non-local effect coming from loops of like charged particles going around extra dimension. But that's very important lesson. The string landscape is exactly the same thing. So you just add six extra dimensions to your theory. That's kind of what string theory makes us expect. And now there is much more possibilities. So we want to go from this 10-dimensional space to four-dimensional space. So there is much more possibility for internal geometry. And there are a bunch of different gauge fields there. So there is analog of this Reissner-Nordström black hole. You may turn on different electric charges. And that what gives rise to is just basically combinatorics of having, like, for the sake. 10 different gauge fields and like 500 units of different possible charges, because these extra dimensions are typically very small, so you cannot add too large charge that will destroy your vacuum. So that's where this 10 to 500 vacuum are coming from. It's simple combinatorics like that. It's kind of ultimate unification of fundamental physics and geography. So what we are probing here, just like this amoeba living in that vacuum, can start exploring extra dimensions. In that case, it can literally escape, right? And see that it doesn't need to be squeezed that much. So here we're trying to explore the geometry of this compactification manifold. So instead of doing this, we are doing something like this. And the picture is, again, there is this complicated manifold. And somewhere there are places where standard model is coming from and standard model particles localized, but there are, could be other sectors. And in this scenario, just like in geography, there is no reasons to apply Occam's razor. So you don't expect what you find to be minimalistic. So the logic which we followed like back in 2009 with Mina, Saurus, and friends were that we're, okay, there is strong indications that QCD axion is there, and QCD axion, that would be one of the axions which just happens to be close to us in this picture. And well, that may be considered as an indication that theoretically it's easy to get these axions. You saw there's just the moment you consider this compactification, you start getting them even in standard model. So that may be considered as indications there are many more of them, and they just happen to be further out from us. They don't couple directly, but they couple gravitationally. So, well, that's what I just said. So axion and string theory, it's exactly the same story as in this standard model picture which I shown to you. The difference is that compactification manifold is much smaller, so you don't have that huge suppression factor. And typically what you get the suppression factor, well, like the exponent for the mass. So again, if you look at the connection between axion mass and FA, then there is a relation like that. So the axion mass is proportional, something like exponent of Planck scale over FA. It's exactly the same geometric kind of arguments which I gave to you in the standard model picture. They apply here. So let's suggest that if you are kind of interested in this factor here of order 100, and by the way, that's the same factor which is suggested by the gauge coupling unification. So, and we know that well, there are indications from the gauge coupling, the standard model, well, is extended with supersymmetry at some scale, which is not too high. They unify, and they unify not at the Planck scale, but at the scale which order that factor below Planck scale, and that really it comes from the same geometric origin as this factor of 100. So, well, now after this digression, so we can come back to this plot. And so we see that this exclusion region leads us, if we want to think about QCD axion, as I said, well, we can look, it's very natural to look also for other axions, that for them, these considerations don't apply, they really cover, they can be everywhere. But if we think for QCD axion, then there are two regions here. One is what was focus of our discussions for the workshop, that's easy axion, that's kind of axion with Planckian FA. And then, well, there is another regime that would be what I call hard, and easy hard refers to how easy and how hard to search for these guys with black holes, with superradians that we discussed here. So let me now say a few words. Well, basically, I think there are many talks about this regime, so I won't say too much about it, but let me say a few things. So this is what we mostly talked about, that L equal one small alpha regime. We have spin down annihilation signals here. And well, it would be very interesting to find an axion like that, because FA is really, it gives us a scale of coupling of axion to everything else. So finding a particle with that scale that would be telling us, well, there is another force, there's another force in nature mediated by this axion, and it naturally comes from the gauge field, which with the same scale as gravity. But on the other hand, well, it's somewhat surprising theoretically for the reasons I was telling you. Although, especially nowadays, maybe it's not so crazy given that we didn't see much new physics at the LHC. So now many and many people start thinking, okay, what if there is standard model and nothing else towards Planck scale? Maybe it's not completely crazy. Apart from some kind of stuff which is very weakly coupled. And finding axion with that coupling, with that value of FA would kind of go in that direction. So it would suggest that there is really no split between MGAT and Planck. So somehow everything is squeezed at the Planck scale. So it's very different. It's very interesting. It's not impossible. One should, although, well, it's somewhat challenging. Actually, I'm not sure I'm aware of concrete theoretical model which would allow QCD axion to be really in Planck, but definitely string theory is hard. So one should go there and look for it, and especially because that's, again, from observational point of view, is the most straightforward regime to look for. And while we already discussed that, there are, for instance, expected events from annihilations, which cover this regime. They basically cover all the mass range which corresponds to FA up to Planck scale. So going above Planck scale, that would become really, really surprising theoretically. And there are even conjectures being put which go basically under the name of weak gravity conjecture, that the gravity is the weakest force. Like, there shouldn't be extra force weaker than that. But in this geometrical picture, again, it all comes from the fact that you need this geometric suppression factor. You need something to appear in the exponent to make axions so light. And for that, you need some room between Planck scale and FA. And for sure, it will be very surprising if FA turned out to be larger. Let me now talk a little bit about gut QCD axion, which we didn't discuss it much. So, and coming back to this plot, so essentially what it corresponds, that was the picture for FA, like 3 × 10^17, which kind of borderline of what being excluded by X-ray spin measurements. So what you need to do with this picture, now you start shifting it left. So you want to be able to shift it left as much as possible, ideally by say order of magnitude, so all the way down to like gut scale. It doesn't have to be exactly that, but one wants to go as further down as possible. Well, and of course, we immediately see what happens. So essentially, you see only, there is only a tail here of this excluded region, right? So we're running out of black holes now. So spin down, we can rely only on the lightest black holes. So that's why I was asking on the talk before. So how well we know what is the lightest black hole. So here, every factor of 2 matters, because it's a factor of 2 in the scale which we can probe. And one should be somewhat inventive we don't have spin down, so kind of our, that's it, so we're running out of black holes. Now we're in a regime where, so these lines here, it's L larger than 1, so we're in a regime of large alpha and large L. And large alpha doesn't mean that this atomic picture doesn't apply. It doesn't mean that system is strongly coupled, because the relevant parameter is alpha divided by L. So the superradiant levels are always somewhat large, and kind of the velocity is for the alpha divided by L. So you're still in a non-relativistic regime. Still all hydrogenic intuition applies, but you are not on the L equal 1 level, you are on the higher level. Spin down and annihilation signals, well, are too small, but to say annihilation signals, they go to high frequencies now. But this is a regime which is most conservative from theory viewpoint. So kind of in the long run, well, we should definitely think how to probe it. It happens, unfortunately, that way, is that quite often that what is kind of you expect from theoretical viewpoint turns out to be the hardest regime to reach. So one way to go is to think how to go for high frequencies to see annihilation. So for instance, Mina with Antigarachi, it's very interesting proposals in that direction. Also, this is a regime when FA gets smaller and smaller. So that means that nonlinearities, that approximation, that axion is a free field, becomes less and less accurate. So one should think about how to model development of superradiance when there are significant axion nonlinearities. So, and that leads to potential signals, for instance, if Bose-Nova may happen, if the axion reaches some critical value and the cloud collapses, then there will be burst-like signal. So it will be lots of energy released. It won't be monochromatic, which is good in that case, because monochromatic signal is too high energy here. And finally, we need to think about possible ways to transmit gravitational wave power into low frequencies here, if we are thinking about LIGO. So we thought, with Mina, we thought about transitions. So what happens in this case that, so for sufficiently high L, like that was for G level, so actually the fastest superradiant level is not the one with the lowest energy with those quantum numbers. So black hole itself, there is a level with the same L values but different radial quantum number which has lower frequencies. So here naturally, black hole populates, but their stability rates are comparable to each other. So black hole populates 2 levels for a while, and then you have kind of at some point you have some chain-like effect when your axions go from a higher level to lower level. So that was the signal we were thinking about. And it looks a bit pathetic here, so compared to annihilation signal. But again, these numbers, they're not zero, so.
But it should be said the edge, the right edge of that position where it goes down depends a lot on what the minimum possible black hole mass is.
Yeah, that's one thing. And also, it's so pathetic because it depends also on distribution of black holes. The problem with here that we just have fewer events. These events, they last for a very short time. That's why the sensitivity is.
So going back to the Bose-Inova nonlinearity, so if you have this can be crazy, total nonsense, so who knows. But if you have this burst, is there a way to couple it somehow efficiently to electromagnetic things? We have no clue about fast radio bursts.
Actually, it's definitely one should think about it. Immediate problem is just viscosity axion that will be very, very soft radio waves. And typically, they just don't expect, they're softer than the plasma frequency in those environments. But I show you some thoughts in this direction. Definitely something which is very tempting to think about. But
I mean, it will cause heating if there's accretion. There's accretion disk around it. It will cause heating of the accretion disk. This is where all the energy will go because the photons really do not propagate. We try to think about it with Sergey. We couldn't find. I mean, we're getting very good numbers, right?
Yes, fair enough. But that doesn't mean that one shouldn't try. So
also not clear whether these Bose-Inovas will ever happen.
Yeah, so I think the zeros are the question, which is probably the question to France and our people who know how to do simulations, is actually what happens
for
William.
Yeah, or Marius and Olivier.
Okay, yeah. So what happens now, it's really, well, the axion is kind of, we expect, know the potential, which we expect, it's cosine potential. So what happens when the superradiance develops in the regime when scalar field has cosine potential with a nonlinearity scale, like several orders of magnitude below Planck scale. So nonlinearities in the axion field becomes important way well before gravitational nonlinearities. So what happens, does it saturate? Or because it's the reason Bose-Inova may happen because it's kind of it's an attractive interaction. So at some point, well, actually it was something which was observed for attractive BCs in the lab. So as you crank up the number of particles, at some point, due to self-interactions, the cloud becomes unstable. But it's a question really of careful analysis of the system, whether that happens or not. So there are transitions, and there may be other ways. For instance, there was an interesting talk here about binary systems, and there one gets these resonances. And that's another natural way to transmit power to low frequency. So it's definitely something which is very, very interesting to think about. Okay, so I'll show again this plot, which we shouldn't be proud about, but that's how it looks like. So that's life for QCD axion. Well, there is a very immediate, easy region to explore, and which is very exciting, and I think we should be excited that it can be explored. But I think also it's important to think how far we can push in the high mass regime. Because, well, it often happens when you close the experiment, you have a feeling that, well, there is new physics right around the corner, and that's the motivation to build a new one. But in this case, nobody will produce new black holes for us with heavier mass, with smaller masses. So that's all what we have. So we should definitely think hard how to explore the lightest of them. Well, unless we're very lucky and it will be, I don't know, some primordial black holes or some. Well, it may happen, maybe.
Nobel Prize.
Yeah, right. barring that possibility, we should really think as hard as we can how to explore what we have. And we potentially have black holes which reach almost up to the gut scale. They have some small clouds around them, but it's challenging to think how to make use of those clouds. So there are also remaining 10 orders of magnitude in masses, and there are many ways to be inventive here. So it's well known that people get data, the experiment is running, they're getting very, very inventive in how to look for new physics in this data. And but kind of we're reaching that situation here. So some of it was already covered in Richard Britta's talk. So we can look for the similar signals for supermassive black holes. But there are definitely more to think about. I should say, well, when back in 2009, we're thinking about superradians with Mina, we definitely felt that we're just scratching the surface. It's such a complicated phenomenon. And I still feel that we're really scratching the surface of what may be happening here. Let me just give you a couple of examples what the things we thought about. So one was already mentioned earlier today. So if there are supermassive black holes and if they're affected by axions, that as they grow, they might go through the regime where the spin is smaller than would be expected in the standard scenario. And that leads to the acceleration of a spin up of the accretion rate. Essentially, it's easier to accrete stuff on the spherical black hole than on the rotating black hole. And so this is shown here. This was, and I think that was the most naive thin disk model. This was some more sophisticated disk model with higher metallicity. I was looking at these boards in our paper this night, and so did I write this? Did I know the word metallicity? but the bottom line here, so that would be evolution of black hole if there is no axion, and that would be evolution if there is as it goes through the axion. So in this range, it's the same range where it's spin down, and because of that, accretion rate is faster. And actually, well, I hear from my friends astrophysicists that actually it's quite challenging. There are black holes with like quasars at very high redshifts, so like Z7, with like 10 to 9, 10 to 10 solar masses. And it's challenging to produce them. It doesn't mean that you necessarily need axions to do that, but I think it's a matter of fact that there is no model which works at the moment which produces those black holes by that time. So definitely that's something to have in mind. So axions may actually help with that. But in general, with gravitational wave experiments, that history will be probed, and so axions may show up also in this way here. So probably well, the another thought, which also we had at some point, which it's related to the question was being asked about direct signatures. Well, when you think about axion cloud, well, you have this large axion value. So for instance, for QCD axion, when it close to maximum, well, that means that theta parameter in that region is really order one. So it's a big effect on QCD, for instance. So when theta is order, like theta equal to pi, which is the largest value you can get, pi in mass is three times lighter than what it is in the standard model. So all nuclear physics in that region is different. So that's also something to think about. So, but it's very hard to, because one thought which comes to mind, okay, maybe there will be some isotopes which may be produced in that region, which otherwise wouldn't be present, and one may look for some exotic lines. The problem is it's very hard to model in QCD what happens when at large theta. But in general, it's tempting to explore this possibility that black hole potentially, it creates some very, very strong field around itself. So that field may be weakly coupled to us if it's not QCD axion, but potentially it is a very strong field, which may lead to interesting phenomena. So one possibility we discussed with Vita, who was my student at the time. So what's shown here, so here I'm imagined kind of in the spirit of this geographical picture. So I'm talking about axion, which is coupled to its own gauge sector. So it's not a standard model. It's an additional gauge group, just like standard model gauge group, but coupled to that sector. So here, for simplicity, we took the case when there are additional light quarks, because then one can do analytic simulations. But actually, a very similar picture would be if you, and that's something people understood over the last few years, it became understood much better. So if you just take pure blue sector, the vacuum structure will be the same. So what's shown here is the, this is a picture where you can do everything analytically. So this is a vacuum structure of a theory. On the left, it's just for three quarks of equal masses. So just like our QCD with up-down strange quark, not being different masses, but with the same masses. And so the blue lines here, this is the horizontal axis here is the value of the axion, value of the theta parameter. So the blue line here is a vacuum, stable or metastable. Well, this is maximum of the potential. This is settle point. So as you see, if you start from what black hole does for us, so it starts around zero, but then axion starts oscillating in this potential. And as you go to larger values of the axion, so in this model, what happens at a sufficiently large value of the axion that your initial vacuum becomes metastable. So there is another vacuum which is lower than that. Well, and as you keep cranking up the value of the axion field, you reach actually the point where your vacuum locally in that region is now unstable. So actually at that point, just in that region, you trigger a first order phase transition. So you go from here to here. And now instead of the bonus that the hidden heat of this phase transition is released not in axion field, but in hadrons of that hidden sector. And it's much easier to couple kind of gauge sector rather than axion to standard model. So that energy can be much more efficiently transmitted into a standard model field. So here I show, this second picture shows what happens if one like introduce splitting between work masses. So this approaches our world, which is a bit boring here. So this kind of this two vacua, this difference becomes smaller and smaller. And in real QCD, we are not in that regime. But it's kind of, there is a broad range of parameters where it can be like that. Let's say just pure glue theory does that. And then for instance, what we kind of we thought about, so okay, there is this gauge sector. One can couple it to us with some say U1, extra U1 field. And here, they're depending on values of couplings and depending on the bounds, one gets now some. So basically, what happens, black hole is cloud reaches that critical value. You produce lots of hadrons. They get hidden hadrons, but then they get converted into standard model stuff, and you produce a fireball, which well later does something which we don't know.
So I think it just disappears, right? Because it's not a true vacuum when they are actually.
Yeah, it's local in that region. You overheated the system, and that triggered phase transition in hidden sector, and that heat then gets transferred into standard model if there is sufficiently strong coupling between that sector and standard model. So here you get a fireball. Well, and basically what we did, we estimated, depending on the axion mass or currently black hole size, we estimated kind of duration of that initial stage and the temperature of this fireball when it's produced, and also energy release, which as you see, because you are releasing all the one fraction of black hole mass in this process. So it's a huge energy which potentially gets transmitted into the standard model electromagnetic radiation. So now then God knows what happens, and this, I don't know how to, but at least it's interesting numbers. Again, these are just two examples that I thinking seriously through this story. There are definitely lots of opportunities for interesting phenomenological signatures. And we have 10 orders of magnitude in energy and completely different physics, as far as astrophysics goes, in the different scales. So it's definitely worth thinking seriously.
Have you guys thought if you have a neutron star black hole binary system, this is where this axion effect would be maximum? Would manifest itself.
Yeah, I mean, this would be interesting given the results from the binary stuff that Hongchen and the others did. So we can estimate how close the neutron star can actually get in to the cloud without...
Right. Without disrupting it.
Yeah.
That's right.
But
then a non-trivial thing is that we don't know what happens when the axion field is pi.
Yeah,
what will it do to the neutron star?
Yeah, I mean, if it's really QCD axion,
With Sergey, when I was visiting NYU, so we tried to go through nuclear physics catalogs and see what happens, because the pion mass changes, so everything changes.
This must be much more.
Yeah, so
because pion mass is different by a factor of 3, so you would think it affects properties of
super large nuclei.
Or you get funny lines, emission lines. So
photon mass inside the neutron star is very different from the conventional method.
What
would
like nuclei?
It's already
neutron star. We're talking about the accretion disk.
Well, yeah, but Savas was asking about neutron star. That's why.
Yeah,
but we were thinking just about how it affects matter in the accretion disk. If there is a cloud with large theta, so it may just do something to accretion.
To the nuclei around the accretion disk, but it was
the problem. It's impossible to decide
make any concrete predictions because there's no way of knowing how.
Well, there are some things you can look at, like which has the same number of like proton plus neutron, but the proton number and the neutron number change by one. So it's also like you will have you can estimate the mass changes, relative mass change of the two, right? Which you can get like some.
It's tough because it turns out that actually proton-neutron potential is not dominated by pion exchange, so it's nuclear physics is complicated. So this is more like inspiration for the future. So let me conclude, and first of all, I would like again thank you, Ine, Masha, William, and Robert. Thanks everybody for coming, and this was a wonderful workshop, very interactive. We need to repeat this, and hopefully one of the next times we'll be talking not about just mass and spin determination for black holes, but for axions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, questions?
I'll ask again. So in this last thing that you, the scenario that you described, do you need coupling with butter?
Well, here what I need gauge sector coupled to the taxon. And well, then I need that, there should be some coupling of that gauge sector to us. Well, which is naturally happens because axions, either they're coupled to QCD or not coupled to QCD. If they're not coupled to QCD or standard model gauge group, then because these are pseudo-Goldstone bosons, their coupling tend to be very, very suppressed to standard model. But other gauge sector, well, it's typically there are some mediators. So that's the point here. It's much easier to transfer energy from that through the gauge sector. Of course, you need things, lots of things to happen for this kind of signal to arise. And but I said, at least in the context of kind of this geographic picture, there is no Occam razor. And it's well known in astronomy that what you observe, they are not generic things. You observe things which can be observed. So in that sense, it's okay if the thing is not generic. It's better that it's non-crazy and agrees
with. Depends on the rate. So
right.
In the case I was thinking about, if you have anything to say with respect to fast radio bursts, right? So those are very peculiar things. The rate is very, very high.
Yes.
And if we are not missing something, it's emitting in a very narrow band in the electromagnetic spectra, which when you call for any cataclysmic events and things like that, it would be hard, or it is hard to just only emit in that narrow.
Yeah, we try to thought about FRBs here, you know, those, because you see energies here, like typical temperatures here, they're quite a bit higher. It's hard, at least most naively, it's hard to get this fireball which is formed here. It's typically much, much hotter than what we want from FRB, so.
Do FRBs appear in other frequencies?
Within that window, and people now are gonna go look in the chat, Kendrick in the 400.
Yeah. I mean, since we're talking about actions, people have thought about FRBs being explained by axions. So we're talking now about axions in a completely different mass regime, at masses that correspond to radio frequencies. There, for the QCD action, you would have, there's a regime where you can have the peaking phase transition after the end of inflation. You would create these kind of like axion stars that would fall, when they fell on neutron stars with big magnetic fields, they would just convert very fast to photons.
Sure, but you have to be careful. That's what I said.
So
the pushback on asking something to be, well, it doesn't have to be generic. But if the rate is high, okay, that's very, in some sense, robust.
Right. Yeah, but
don't use the word generic, but robust.
Right. No, FRBs, we didn't manage to get them from here. But if you look at here, like this energy and like range of temperatures here, and you get a fireball, that's not that different from kind of what people some just in the past wanted for like some, there's some models of short gamma ray bursts. So maybe there's some exotic population of gamma ray bursts maybe coming from something like that. So but not FRBs, no.
Can I just say?
Right.
Oh, okay. because we have to go back to our regular CT. Okay, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
A short interruption. I just want to thank Olivia and the rest of the bistro and Stephanie and the rest of the promoter staff for the this workshop.